Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for High Velocity Radio.
Welcome to the High Velocity Radio Show, where we celebrate top performers producing better results in less time. Stone Payton, Lee Cantor here with you this afternoon. Lee, this is going to be a fantastic segment. You ready for this?
I am.
All right. Please join me in welcoming back to the Business Radio X microphone, author, consultant, thought leader, with a new book that we want to let our folks know about, Miss Linda Hoops, President's with the Resilience Alliance. How are you?
I'm doing just great. Thanks. Great to be here.
Now, Linda, can you share a little bit about Resilience Alliance? What are you guys doing?
Resilience Alliance is a firm that does training and consulting around organizational change, resilience, and employee well-being. We teach and license other people to use tools that we've developed, and we also do some of our own workshops and consulting.
Now, why is resilience important to you?
Because life continues to throw changes at us, and the better we can deal with them, the more resilient we are, the better outcomes we get, and the more we can live the lives we're meant to be.
Now, recently, a lot of, in the news and the buzzword has been grit. Is this aligned with that kind of grit thinking?
That's a great question. I see grit as one segment of the resilience landscape. So grit is specifically about having the fortitude to stick with long-term goals that you have. And that's one kind of challenge that people might choose or confront, but there's a whole range of other ones, everything from living with chronic illness to being kidnapped to whatever it might be. So I see grit as part of that.
So now in resilience, what is the choice of not being resilient? Like, what is a life of non-resilience?
I read a story one time about a lady who was having trouble at home, family, whatever, got on a bus, went and disappeared, left her children, her family. That's a non-resilient response.
So they just said, I quit.
Check out,
and I'm
quit.
I'm just going to be on this bus until it stops somewhere and I'll get out.
Just run away. Absolutely.
Do you see people doing that?
I do. You can picture two people who were affected by the Atlanta recently, mm-hmm. You know, where one person goes, okay, let me figure out how to do this. And another person is just whining and complaining and really just not working through it in a very skillful manner at all. Mm-hmm. I think that there are a lot of differences in how people deal with those challenges.
Now, is this something that maybe a generation of not so great parenting has contributed to some problems?
Well, I would say that many parents hate to see their kids in pain and hate to see their kids having problems. And so they go out of their way to not just be helicopter parents, but I actually heard a term lately that I like called lawnmower parents. And
what's
what lawnmower
that?
Parents do is they smooth the way, they mow right. The grass, they make sure that there aren't any bumps in the way of their precious ones. And I think that that's not necessarily helpful in terms of teaching kids to deal with skinned knees and getting fired from a job, losing a relationship.
I always found as a parent that it was better for my kid to fail in kind of these safe environments when they're little and the stakes are so low than to do everything for them. And the first time they fail is when they're 23 and they're in the real world.
It's really frightening how many kids get to that age without having really had to confront challenges and problems. I think you're right.
So now when you're working with clients, how do you kind of help them through this?
A lot of times it's in the context of a major change that's going on in the organization. So they recognize that people are going to be challenged by whether it's a reorganization or new technology. And what we will typically do is work first with the leaders to help them understand their own resilience and learn how to be good role models for that and how to work as a team to create an environment for resilience. And then we do work with individuals to help them understand their own responses to change. So people differ in how easy it is for them to look at a situation and see the opportunities, for instance, or to make a good plan. And so we do training with people, and we have an assessment tool called the Personal Resilience Profile that helps people understand how they compare to a large population of folks that we've studied. And we give them feedback on that. We show them some exercises to build their resilience muscles. I start with the belief that everybody's got resilience muscles, just like they do physical muscles. Mm-hmm. And so we teach them what the push-up or the biceps curl is for their focused muscle or their experimenting muscle. And
right.
There's a lot of practical application.
Now, when a company is dealing with maybe a group of younger people that haven't had a lot of resilience practice, how do you kind of do something like this for them to help them through? If they have in their own personal life have difficulty with resilience, how can they kind of adapt to this change in an organizational?
I think the first thing is self-awareness, recognizing that it's important to develop this skill. So sometimes you'll get people showing up in class and they're like, I don't need to learn this. I'm resilient. And so you have to start with getting them motivated to understand why this is helpful for them. And that takes leadership. That takes leaders saying, we believe this is important. There's a lot of change. Right. The ability to change is an important skill. So the motivation comes first. And then they can be open to thinking about how to practice in small ways.
Can you share an example of how you were able to move maybe a younger person through this resilience kind of spectrum?
Let's see. So we've done some work with high school students, actually. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking of one kid who went through a pilot workshop that we were doing for that age group. And one of the insights that they had is that they had felt like they had to do everything themselves. So one of the resilience muscles is about reaching out and asking for help. Mm-hmm. And so you get a lot of kids and they think that they look vulnerable if they ask for help. Right. And so when they start to see mm-hmm. how these things work together and recognize that that's maybe a muscle that they haven't been using, I'm thinking of this kid and they became a lot more motivated to recognize how the people around them could provide some support, either emotional support or practical support for them.
Now, in an organization, how does a company marry the wanting the employees to take risks and take chances, and then also with them not wanting them to fail and make mistakes?
There are companies who place a lot of emphasis on failing forward.
Right.
On it's okay to fail as long as you take the learnings from it.
Right.
Now, there are some companies that are in very high-risk environments, and they have to, just like a parent would with their kids, put the boundaries in place to make sure that the failures right. don't cost the company their reputation at right. all. But it's a balancing act, and I think some of it is really consciously developing a culture that has that openness to learning, openness to trying new things, and the openness to doing a debrief afterwards to figure out what we learned.
Now, do you find it's easier to work with companies? Obviously, if they're reaching out to you, they must have some self-awareness that this is an issue, right? Or they wouldn't.
Sometimes so. Many of the people who reach out to us are the folks who are responsible for building internal capability. So whether it's org development, org effectiveness, HR, they have a charter from the organization to help build the organization's readiness for change. And so they'll bring us in. There's not always the self-awareness at the leadership level. Sometimes,
really?
Well, sometimes they think, oh, this is all that soft stuff. You know, that's so all that woo-woo stuff.
Let Bill handle that.
That's right. Yeah, you just tell us how to do all this. But I think I worked with a leadership group from a healthcare organization not too long ago, from the marketing part of an organization. And in fact, we had to reschedule the meeting once because the leader got called to Washington because of some of the healthcare stuff that was going on there. So when we finally got together, we had a great conversation about all the different ways that they're having to reconfigure to deal with the challenges in the marketplace and all of that. And they saw it as very important, not just for the individuals in the room, but for how they work together as a team. So one of the things that we do is we look at the different resilience strengths that people have and see how the team can leverage those. For instance, there's one resilience muscle around being structured and organized. Not my greatest strength, but I've learned to team with people who are really good at that. Mm-hmm. And in a similar way, we can help organizations see how they can use their resources collectively to be more resilient than they might be individually.
And that's an important learning in today's complex world, is to leverage everybody's strengths.
Absolutely. There's a lot of emphasis on strengths these days, not just the positive psychology stuff, but many organizations are doing a lot of strength-based work. And I think from a resilience standpoint, that's really important, because if you start to tell people, you know, you suck, you're not resilient, whatever, that's not very helpful. Helping right. them recognize how to use and leverage their strengths while they're filling in some of the places that they may be draining their energy during change is a powerful combination.
Thing, right?
Yeah, right. Absolutely.
All right, so let's do some profiling here for a moment, if we might.
Okay.
Are there categories of people, types of people, gender, age, any cross-section, any cut like that you find typically more resilient than another, or is it just across the board?
We've done some research on that, and we do find that there's a relationship to level in the organization. So oftentimes people are getting into higher levels of leadership because they can work in that environment of heavier change. There's another group. Let's see if you can guess. We did some population breakdowns by profession, and we found one profession that does tend to be pretty resilient in general. Any guesses?
Well, I was hoping it might be sales because I was thinking that salespeople would have to be very resilient.
Got it in one. Very good. Salespeople do have to be very resilient.
Because, I mean, we're told, I have a large part of my responsibility here at the network is business development. And, you know, I get told no, you know, more than I'd like.
You're always walking into the unknown. Right? You're always walking. Yes, you absolutely. You have to deal with a lot of potential adversity. And what you've done is to choose a profession that presents challenges all the time. And that's another thing that I've been sharing with organizations a lot more lately is this idea of the world being your resilience gym. And the idea that you can deliberately choose to engage with challenges that are going to help you build your resilience. So I think, you know, kids going into a door-to-door sales job, you know, selling Girl Scout cookies or whatever, is great practice for dealing with rejection, dealing with the unknown, dealing with the unexpected, and ways to build resilience. Now, my recent mantra is how we can use traffic to build our resilience. Especially Atlanta traffic.
You're working on that?
I'm working on that. So you get in there and somebody cuts you off in traffic and there's a traffic jam and Waze is telling you it's going to be 20 minutes in traffic. And so what you say to yourself is, oh, good, resilience practice.
That's right. The obstacle is the way.
So but talking about this, I love this idea. I love the imagery of resilience muscles and I like this idea of resilience practice. So is a viable strategy setting up for yourself or for your people these lower risk, almost practice opportunities to deal with it?
Absolutely. One of the things that we know, I've been doing some reading in how the brain functions under stress. And one of the things that we know is how we operate in the little stresses is a marker for how we operate in the big ones. And we also know that we can rewire our brains. And so this idea that we can use small challenges to practice is absolutely true. It's absolutely powerful. And for me, I race sailboats, and at an amateur level, I'm, you know, Lake Lanier, but it's...
I could see that in your face when I met you in the lobby. I said, this is a sailboat racer.
But it's great resilience practice because you can't control the weather. You know, I may want an easy day where I get to just drift around on the lake and drink wine and look at the sunset and the winds are up to 15 or 20 knots and I really have to work. Or, you know, another boat comes up and messes with you. There's all different kinds of ways you get to practice. And so, setting those challenges for yourself, people who take on careers like firefighting or going into the special forces or whatever are doing that sometimes because it gives them the challenge. It gives them something to push up against, gives them a way to develop those muscles.
Is there something that maybe a tip or that you could share with a business right now that they can practice this on their own, some low hanging fruit for them to kind of get a taste of this?
Sure. I would say the first thing to do is to teach people to calm down. Because one of the first things we need to do when we encounter disruption, challenge, whatever, is to get into the part of our brain that can think and reason. And so if they do nothing more in the organization than teach people to stop and take a breath before they go into the next thing, they will do a great job.
So breathing?
Breathing is good. Breathing is good. The other thing that I'm working on right now is people can be more resilient when they have more energy. Now, I know that sounds silly, but people don't often think about the energy supply that we have. Every change, every challenge that we encounter takes some of our physical, mental, emotional, or spiritual energy. And so when organizations do things that deplete that energy from people, piling 20 changes on them at once or whatever it might be.
Or making them do things that aren't their superpowers.
Right. Serving bagels at meetings instead of healthy food.
Right.
You know, so I've been doing some work. I've been doing some blogging on human energy sustainability in organizations as fuel for resilience. And so helping organizations understand what practices they can put in place to support and help people replenish those different forms of energy.
Like nap rooms,
meditation rooms.
There you go.
Even just healthy water available to people.
Right.
You know, if people have to like go down the hall and spend $2 for a bottle of water rather than having a water fountain right there, they're not going to stay as hydrated, which is one of the little keys to physical energy.
Right. So now, recently, you have a book out, Prosilience.
Prosilience,
right?
Yep.
Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. It basically is the idea that we've been talking about, that you can proactively and intentionally work on developing your resilience muscles. Mm-hmm. So it starts by talking about the different kinds of challenges that we face. And there's this idea of a challenge map. We face some challenges that are short and some that are long, mm-hmm. lifelong, in fact.
Sure.
We face some that we choose ourselves or that are kind of a side effect of something we've done. And we face some that other people impose on us. And then in between, there's a lot of life happens kind of stuff. So we first talk about the nature of why these things are challenging. And then I talk about four building blocks of resilience. One of them is calming yourself, and that's the breathing, getting out in nature, or whatever it might be. Then there's a choosing the right strategy. So some challenges we can reframe as opportunities, but not all of them.
Right.
Sometimes we can fix the situation, and sometimes we just have to accept what is. And so figuring out what combination of those is going to be the best in any situation. Then we talk about a set of resilience muscles, and then we talk about the four types of energy that I was talking about. So the book goes through each of those and has a lot of practical exercises. There's a workbook at the back and a downloadable version for the ebook that you can record your answers to it. And so I'm really excited about the feedback I've been getting about how people find it very practical, and they've got a lot of ideas now about what they can be doing.
Now, is it for individuals or organizations or both?
It's really for individuals, but there's a lot of application for organizations. So I could see an organization using it as the basis for a series of lunch and learns or some classes, whatever. But it's the first book that I wrote was aimed more at organizations and organizational change. This one's really for anybody, whether you're getting out of high school and going on to college, or dealing with an aging parent, or living with a chronic illness, or whatever the challenge might be. It's got some practical guidance about how to work through that challenge and use it then to strengthen you for the next challenges.
Now, let's talk a little bit about Resilience Alliance. How is it an alliance?
The sense of an alliance is, because most of our business model is about teaching other people to do what we do.
Right.
So our clients are largely internal and external consultants, coaches, leaders who want to spread this work around resilience. And so we have this whole network of people who we've trained who are out there independently doing the work that they do, whether it's inside a large pharmaceutical company or as a coach or mentor to people, to clients. We keep in touch with this network and build on each other's work. We learn lessons from each other and have a lot of fun.
So you created a resilience methodology?
Yes. We have training materials, tools, practical applications, exercises that people can go through. And then we basically teach people how to do that.
So if I'm a trainer in another city, state, or even country, I can get certified for this and then be an official blessed resilience.
You can be a personal resilience practitioner. Yes, we've moved to doing all of our training through a series of live webinars.
Mm-hmm.
So we've trained people in Finland and Israel, all over the place, Russia, I think, recently. And so it's a lot of fun to get people into that community.
So these people are already doing consulting in training and development?
Most of them are already doing some sort of thing that involves either using individual feedback, like the personal resilience profile. They're doing classroom training. They walk in with that and want to add this set of materials right to their toolkit.
All right. So I'm a one-trick pony. I'm going back to my profiling question. You're working all over the world. Is there some cultural terrain to be navigated with respect to this in different parts of the world?
Yes. What we know is that people's brains work pretty much the same, but how they interpret things are very different. So, for instance, we know that the Finns have a lot of long, dark days. And so their norms for being on the sort of high end of the positivity scale are sometimes a little bit lower. In the UK, it's not really done to talk about yourself too much. So there's a self-confidence kind of indicator on the scale. That's one of the muscles, is that self-confidence and self-efficacy. And so we find that in the UK and some other cultures, people don't tend to strongly agree to the questions about that. So their scores are going to tend to be a little bit lower. So we have to be aware of those cultural things as we help people interpret their scores and as we look at the results.
Did anything surprise you when you were working around the world?
Great question. Now I'm going to have to think. So one of the things that I've been surprised by lately is that the Finns, we have a distributor partner over in Finland that has done their own work in training practitioners there. But they've really picked up a piece that we've done some work with here, but that's become really popular over there, which is some work that we've done on team resilience. So looking not just at what's the collection of resources we have, but how do we work effectively as a team to bring those strengths to the table? So we actually have a second assessment, a second report, a second certification around working with effective teams. And the Finns are going crazy with this stuff. They love it. They really are doing a lot of great work in team effectiveness there that I haven't seen the uptake in many other countries.
Now, do you have any stories you can share about people who have gone through this and maybe you've checked in with them later on and they talked about how it made an impact in their lives, you know, kind of being a little more resilient in life?
I have a number of stories. Let me see if I can think of the best one to tell you. I know a number of people who have found that the self-awareness that they've gained has led them to some personal development. I'll even tell you my own story. So one of the things that, one of the characteristics, the muscles that we look at is what we call flexible social or the connection muscle, which is about reaching out to other people for help. This is the same one I was talking about with the with kids. I'm an oldest child and I'm not supposed to need help. I'm supposed to be the one to give help
to
people.
The helper.
I'm the helper. And so myself and several other people I've talked to have had this insight that that's draining my energy, that there are places where I can reach out to other people and become much more effective by drawing on them and asking for help and recognizing the strengths they bring. And it's been a tremendous insight for me as a leader of a company, because I used to think I really had to be able to do everything. And it's enabled me to let go and trust what other people bring to the table and be more open to the suggestions that they bring. And I've really consciously worked on developing that muscle, and it's really paid off.
Well, I'm looking at this maybe from a little bit of a different lens, having grown up a little bit in on the periphery, at least in the consulting, training, development world. And I'm trying to envision myself as, I don't know, maybe the domain is sales training and sales development. And I'm out teaching the Jim Jammy five-step stone sales methodology. And I'm thinking, what a competitive advantage and what an enhanced ability to deliver genuine results if I can couple resilience, that with my expertise in that domain and bring that to my clients. I would think that would make me a tremendously greater strategic resource to my clients than perhaps my competitors, or you know, perhaps I might have been one the first time around. Yeah,
sure. I think if you can teach people the content knowledge around what their role is, and then also teach them essentially how to learn and grow through change, that's a tremendous combination.
It seems to me like it would be incredibly rewarding work. I can tell you're having a great deal of fun with this. Now, are you out doing some direct consulting or speaking, coaching yourself, or have you really decided, you know, the my best leverage here is to empower this alliance?
A little of both. I love the R&D. I love taking ideas that could potentially be complicated and figuring out how to put them into simple frameworks and practical things that people can use. But you can't do that without trying it out on people. And so I love getting out there and piloting things. I have a Leading with Energy workshop that I piloted a little while back that talks about how leaders can sustain and replenish their own energy as the fuel for their resilience. And There are several other things I've been working on. And so I love getting in front of groups, but I'm not the flaming extrovert that some of my clients are. And so I'm really happy to do that and to do speaking engagements and to do leadership workshops, and then to come back and be able to play with the data and look at the research stuff. And, you know, I have doctoral students calling me saying, hey, can I use your tool in my research? And so we have a number of people that have done research based on the data set that we have or collected their own data. And so the combination is great.
Well, and there must be pockets of opportunity. I could see diving into any one of the, just take one of the resilience muscles is the imagery that you've used. You could build an entire research effort just around one of those muscles. I mean, it's not like this work has this very clean beginning and end. So you're just going to continue to to grow through this, I think.
I'm going to continue to evolve it. We started with the resilience muscles, and then as I've learned more about the brain, the calming yourself piece has become really important. The energy piece has become really important. A number of years ago, I went and got certified as a massage therapist, and although I'm not practicing right now, the whole mind-body element became much more important to me. And that's, I really noticed how energy plays a role in this. And so when organizations overload people and people's energy is really depleted, it's hard for them to have resilient responses to some of the changes that the companies are bringing to the table. And so yeah, I continue to expand what I'm thinking about and how the model goes. And you could take any one of the areas and really go into depth. And that's really what some of our practitioners do. So we have some of them that are coaches, for instance, and they may find that a person needs to work on their creativity, their flexible thinking. Well, they can drop into that space and then hook into other material that they're familiar with and other exercises that they know that can help people in that area. So it's really practical from that standpoint.
So did the book come together pretty easily for you? What was that like? Did it just, you sit down and it just poured forth, or did you struggle with pieces of it?
How many people do you know that have written books? I started about 2.5 years ago. I did a writing retreat. I went and holed up in a little cabin in Florida for about 10 days and got the bones of it put together. And then I came back and the demands of running a business kind of got in the way.
Yeah.
And so I had to figure out, how do I carve out time to get this thing done? But I found that the thing that worked best for me was to make a promise to people that I had to deliver on. So I went to a bunch of people who are familiar with my work and said, will you review the first draft of my book? And I'll have it to you by such and such a date. So, oh my gosh, I had to have it done to send to them. And then when they started sending my feedback, I had this wonderful editor and proofreader that I work with. And I sent all the feedback to her. I said, I can't even look at it. I'm scared. I don't want to look at this. And so I said, consolidate it. Summarize it. Tell me what they said. And she looked at it all and she came back and she said, you have nothing to worry about. They've got your back. There's some really good suggestions and they're all really very supportive of what you've done. So I did that iteration round. And then I decided I needed to do one more round with people who weren't as familiar with my work, because these were people, the first circle right. was all people that I knew really well. So the second was people who weren't as close to the work. And I was on an airplane to Thailand, trying to get the draft done for them. And I was sitting in a cafe in Bangkok on the way to a business engagement over there, saying, I've got to get this thing done because I promised I'd get it done for them. So I got that out to people around, I guess it was Thanksgiving last year, got their comments back. And then it was just the learning curve around putting it together, packaging it, so on. It was a great learning process for me. The next one's going to be a lot easier.
Do you already have that kind of sketch out?
I actually have two that I'm thinking about. The next one I think is going to be called Leading with Energy. And it'll talk about that theme of human energy sustainability in organizations mm-hmm. and what leaders can do to support and sustain their own energy and the energy of the people in their organizations. Can't make any promises about when it's going to be out, though.
No date. You're not going to put
not
a stake.
Not going to put a stake in the ground.
But that's a resilience muscle. Sometimes is that one of them, or is tactic anyway?
Yes, absolutely.
Like putting a stake in the ground.
So yes. So focus is one of them. So priorities, and right. knowing that for me, a priority is figuring out how to express all the things I'm learning in ways that people can use. I just have to make time for it. It's one of the big rocks that I have to make time for.
So now, if there's a consultant out there that's listening and wants to learn more, maybe add this resilience tool to their toolkit, what's the best way to learn more about that?
Well, you can certainly send me an email. I'm Linda@resiliencealliance.com. Our website is resiliencealliance.com. And if you're into social media, we're on Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn. And but I'd say if you're specifically interested in becoming certified as a resilience practitioner, just email me, give me a call, and look forward to connecting with you.
And then what is the pain in organizations having where they might want to give you guys a call?
People are feeling overwhelmed by change. A lot of change is coming down the road and we're not sure that people are ready to take it on. Really anything that's about recognizing that change muscles are a competitive advantage for us.
Mm-hmm. Then they should go to the same website and there's information.
Absolutely.
And then what about the book? What's the best way to go hold of the book?
It's on Amazon, Prozilience, is spelled just like it sounds, P-R-O-S-I-L-I-E-N-C-E. You can find it on Amazon in ebook and paperback format. And we also have a prozilience.com website that has a link to the book, but it's mostly a collection of resources for people who want to learn more about their own resilience. It's just free stuff, links, blogs, whatever related to building your own resilience intentionally, which is what Prozilience is all about.
Well, it has been an absolute delight having you in the studio this afternoon. Informative, inspiring. You've given us a lot to think about, and I already feel a little bit better equipped to deal with
some resilient.
I think I am a little more resilient. And
you ready to go face that Atlanta traffic?
I am. Thank you so much for joining us.
It's been my pleasure.
All right. Until next time, this is Stone Payton for Lee Cantor. Our guest today, Dr. Linda Hoops with the Resilience Alliance, and everyone here at the Business Radio X family saying we'll see you in the fast lane.